Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today's guest, longtime tax reporter David K. Johnston, does not mince words in his new book, The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. He wrote the book to let you know that you are being systematically exploited by powerful corporations every day. He writes, quote, "No other modern country gives corporations the unfettered power found in America to gouge customers, shortchange workers, and erect barriers to fair play. A big reason is that so little of the news addresses the private, government-approved mechanisms by which price gouging is employed to redistribute income upward." David K. Johnston writes about a host of large industries, including banks, credit card lenders, electric utilities, healthcare, oil pipelines, Hollywood studios, insurance, railroad, and water companies. And he says they've all worked quietly to rewrite the economic playbook in their favor. On today's Your Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by talking about the fine print. What can we do to fight back against the hundreds of obscure fees and taxes that line the pockets of big corporations? David K. Johnston is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter who has been called the de facto chief tax enforcement officer of the U.S. His most recent books, Perfectly Legal and Free Lunch, were New York Times bestsellers. He was a reporter with the New York Times for 13 years. He also teaches at Syracuse University College of Law and the Whitman School of Management, and he was recently elected board president of Investigative Reporters and Editors. And David joins us from New York. Hi, David. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Rose.
Well, it's great to have you. So today is the first day of your launch. Congratulations.
Thanks.
And I have to say, like most of your books, I read it and I just shook my head, sort of screamed a few times at the coffee shop. So, David, you spent about 4 years researching this book.
Right.
And you say that so much of this information has not been reported before. You want us to know that we're being, well, systematically taken for a ride by corporations. What did you hope to find out during your research?
Well, one of the reasons it took 4 years was nobody has been working at all at doing what I was doing, which is to look at these private, government-sanctioned but private mechanisms to suck money upward in the economy. And a lot of this turns out to involve utilities, partly because there's public records about them, but there were a lot of court cases and other things I had to go do. But I wanted to get an idea of how corporate power is being exercised. In the colonial era, there was a single corporation in the United States. At the beginning of the American Republic, there were six corporations, and soon there were 20. There are currently in America over 6 million corporations, although the top 14,000 of them control about 89% of the assets.
Hmm. Now, you go through so many industries here, and these industries, most of us interact with them on a regular basis, whether you're talking about paying your phone bill or your cable bill or taking a train. There's so many egregious examples in here, and I'm wondering which one really got under your skin the most.
Well, let me give you one that I think is very relevant to people in your audience, and that has to do with what I believe will be a coming crisis for customers of Pacific Gas and Electric. We had this terrible explosion in San Bruno, and it turns out that there was a second pipeline in San Bruno, just as big, 30 inches across, as the one that blew up a whole block and killed, among other people, the state public utility commission, public utilities commission staffer, whose job was to investigate whether these pipelines were safe. The mayor of that city, Jim Ruane, told me that the fire department, the police department, he is mayor, had no idea these pipelines were even there. Mm. And I tell in the book how the federal government now grants safety waivers to pipeline companies where they say it's not possible to inspect them. They call them special permits, and they don't like my calling them safety waivers, but there's no inspections. And they send school principals every year, the industry does, a brochure. It's 6 pages long. It's full of how wonderful the pipeline industry is. And when you get to page 5, it suddenly says, you are being sent this notice because your school is in a high-consequence area. And then it doesn't tell you anything about what that means or where a pipeline might be. And by the way, high-consequence area is a euphemism for zone of certain death. Hmm. Now, PG&E has been getting rate increases for, among other things, putting in new power poles. It says in testimony that it should have to replace its poles on a 50-year cycle. That would be 46,000 poles a year. And how many have they been putting up in recent years? 3,000, which means the last pole now in use would have to last until the year 27, I think it's 87. This is one of the utility companies all across the country are being hollowed out. They cut staffs. They're getting huge rate increases and then telling the workers, we can't afford you. You're going to have your wages cut. In one case, one big company back east wants to cut fringe benefits 50% after they got a series of rate increases. And they're not maintaining and taking care of these systems, which means that down the road, they will undoubtedly come back when things fall apart and need an emergency rate increase to make you pay more because they're diverting the money they're already getting. It's supposed to go to take care of the system to other uses, including executive pay and dividends.
Well, the other thing that you do so well here is you tie it back to the corporation's connections to politicians. And in this case, to stay in California, because so many of us are aware of the California Public Utilities Commission, you write that more than a century of experience has taught corporate-owned utilities how to keep politicians focused on corporate interests rather than what is good for the country or customers. One way is to raise money from regulated industries to spend on travel for those who regulate the companies. So tell us a little bit about Mike Peavy. What happened after his term ended as president of the CPUC?
Well, Mike Peavy was the former president of Southern California Edison, one of the three really big electric utilities in California. There's Sempra, the old San Diego Gas and Electric, Southern California Edison, and PG&E. And he was appointed by Governor Schwarzenegger and was president of the Public Utilities Commission. In fact, three of the five commissioners during the Schwarzenegger era were either from or deeply connected to in their business, the utility industry, and all of them were incredibly friendly and helpful to the industry. When Peavy left, he and some others went to set up a foundation. And the purpose of this foundation was to raise money from the utility companies to pay for trips to places like Hawaii for state legislators who serve on the committees dealing with utilities and for utility commissioners themselves. Now, California has a law that says you can't accept a gift of more than $50 from a lobbyist. There's a loophole. You can accept unlimited travel from a nonprofit. So the lobbyists just wash their money through a nonprofit, and a bunch of legislators, including John Perez, were the Assembly Speaker.
Democrat
from Los Angeles, went to Hawaii, where they stayed at a Fairmont. Anybody familiar with hotels knows that's a high-end hotel brand. The trip cost about $13,000 per legislator and was perfectly legal under California law. The defense of this by one of Peavy's associates was that, well, if there's a conspiracy here, everybody in the utility business is in on it. Well, they were. Every one of the utility companies was putting up money. And it was simply buying the kind of protection that they want from consumers. And let me just give you one other example, one that shows how ordinary citizens can have an impact. For a couple of years, I wrote a column for Tax Notes, which is a nonprofit publication. They do about 250 pages a week of just tax news. And I wrote a very short item that the California Public Utilities Commission was considering requiring customers of the SFPP pipeline. SFPP is one of the descendants of the octopus that strangled California, the railroad octopus, back in the late 1800s. And to require that their rates that they collect include the California state income tax. Well, SFPP pipeline doesn't pay California income taxes because it's a partnership, and partnerships don't pay the corporate income tax. An administrative law judge at the PUC recommended against this, but a commissioner whose previous job was working in underwriting utility financings recommended they do it. Well, after reading my little short item in State Tax Notes, which has a readership nationwide of, 20,000, it's not very big, either two or three people called the PUC and said they wanted to speak at the next meeting, and that's all it took to kill it. And it is saving California taxpayers not a lot of money, $9 million a year. That's 25 cents per Californian. But it illustrates how if people just knew about things and spoke up, then they wouldn't get ripped off so severely.
And that's one of the main points, especially when you're talking about PG&E. You write that no major news organizations in California are reporting on this, with the exception of Dennis Wyatt, the person you call the no-nonsense editor of the Daily Manteca Bulletin.
Right. It's very strange. Dennis Wyatt has been tough as nails covering them, and the reason that their news in Manteca, it's about 80 miles east of San Francisco, is that the city fathers there over 100 years ago recognized that if they were going to have a successful agricultural community, they needed good water. So they built the South San Joaquin Irrigation District, and they built dams without federal funds, and in the process of that, they built hydroelectric that they sell the electricity, and it helps hold down taxes there, and the price people, the farmers pay for water in Manteca is as little as 1/32nd what sometimes farmers in Southern California pay for the water they get. Well, they've been trying to buy out PG&E. And if you go to the, there was a public hearing at the South San Joaquin Irrigation District, and they have this very well-maintained, nice yard, and they simply moved all the trucks away, and on the concrete pads with a roof to keep the sun away, they had this public meeting. You could look across the chain link fence at this run-down mess of a yard where PG&E's trucks are kept. And PG&E sent a public relations spokesman. Now, here are all these farmers sitting around, you know, neatly dressed, but they're in starched jeans and plaid shirts and big belt buckles. And she shows up in Christian Louboutin high heels, the ones with red soles on the bottom, and a tight-fitting dress, and a very sleek, urbane dress, and proceeds to spout off, you know, we're going to sue you to the ends of the earth over this, and it's going to cost you so much, and gives a value for the assets that, if it were true, would make PG&E worth many times what it's actually worth. The fact is that if the South San Joaquin Irrigation District is able to replace PG&E, people's electric rates will go down.
Right.
Across the country, people who have public power generally pay 30% less, and electric rates overall nationwide have been rising faster than the rate of inflation. The Edison Electric Institute, by the way, the National Trade Association for Utilities, has a letter in Newsweek this week attacking me over saying that, and then suggesting I'm wrong, and it's very artfully written, but the fact is the official data show since 1999, electricity prices for residential customers have been rising, depending on who your company is, between 8 and 48% faster than the rate of inflation.
Yeah, I'm a PG&E customer. I see it on my bill every month. And when you're talking about a company like PG&E, a lot of people do feel sort of helpless because it's the only option we have. So how can you, well, as you say, fight back and ensure at least that these pipes are safe?
Well, there are a number of things that people can do. First of all, a company like PG&E is a legal monopoly. Monopolies are not competitive businesses, and I'm a champion of competitive markets. A lot of this book is about the need to have competitive markets. Where we don't have markets, we need to have regulation that's a substitute for the market. And the problem is, in California, you don't have that anymore. Now, interestingly, there's a paid obituary, a paid death notice in the Chronicle, I think yesterday, for a man named Robert Batinovich. That he was not the subject of a page one obituary in the Chronicle is just incredibly revealing of how the news media has stopped covering utility regulation and acts now as a mouthpiece for companies like PG&E. Robert Batinovich, when he was on the PUC in the late 70s, he's a very wealthy businessman, he tried to seriously reform rate making in California and undertook a whole variety of things to benefit customers, was hated by the utility industry. I was covering the Public Utilities Commission in those days for the Los Angeles Times and was based in San Francisco. And I assure you that PG&E went out of its way to express how deeply they disliked this man, who was, in fact, a champion of ordinary customers, commercial customers, and industrial customers, who tried to bring balance. California PUC, since Schwarzenegger, has been quite literally, excuse me, in the pockets of the big utilities in California. And consumers are not being watched out for. And what can you do about it? Well, like the people who said, I want to appear on the agenda, you show up. Support organizations like TURN, the Utility Reform Network that Sylvia Siegel founded back in the 1960s, that are trying to do the necessary work to understand whether utilities should be getting higher rates. Pat Power, who was a staffer at the PUC years ago, has been a lawyer for utilities, has been a lawyer for consumers, and is now an administrative law judge with the Oregon Public Utility Commission. I quote him in the book as saying that one way to reform this is to require that for every dollar a utility company spends seeking a rate increase, it provide $1 to advocates for the customers. Even that will not make a level playing field because the company knows all about its internal workings and the other sides do not. But right now, it is a heavily funded utility company against unbelievably lightly funded consumer groups and a staff that's supposed to represent the public that has been cut and cut and cut in the name of deregulation and less government.
We're speaking with David K. Johnston. He's out with a new book just out today called The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. And David says you are being systematically exploited by powerful corporations every single day. He writes about, you name it, railroads, Hollywood studios, utilities, banks. We'll talk all about Goldman Sachs. There's so much in this book. A lot of this has not been reported before. David writes, corporations have grown so powerful that they have inverted the Roman equation. Rather than corporations existing to serve the state serves them. And if you have any questions or comments for David, if you've seen changes over the past couple of decades in your bills, do you even know how to read your bill? So many people do not know how to read their phone bill. There's all this fine print. You pay it, you send it in. No questions really asked. So if you have any questions for David about what he found in his 4 years of research for this book, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or comment at yourcallradio.org. All right, so we talked a little bit about PG&E and what you found with them. What else really got under your skin? I mean, there's so much in here. I found the railroad story fascinating, the Goldman Sachs story about bonuses. The one thing, though, that really got me, David, was companies taking your taxes without you knowing it.
Yes, this is, I've had a lot of people, when I've talked about this in the past, write me emails saying, you know, this can't be true.
Right.
In 19 states, California is not one of them yet. In 19 states, 2,700 big companies, basically every big brand name you've heard of in America, Rupert Murdoch's Dow Jones, General Motors, General Electric, Procter & Gamble, big European banks like Deutsche Bank, big Japanese banks, manufacturers like Electrolux from Sweden, have made deals where they get to keep the state income taxes withheld from their workers' paychecks. In essence, they are taxing their workers, and you and I have to make up for their taxes. Now, the way this came about is 20 years ago, a Kentucky lawmaker came up with this as an idea to help a struggling business in Appalachia. But very quickly, it just took off in all these other states. And Illinois, for example, for a company to get this deal, and in that state, Google, Ford, Chrysler, Mitsubishi, Navistar, the big maker of, you know, industrial trucks and earth-moving equipment, and Continental Tire, which is German, and I think one other company, have these deals. You have to threaten to leave the state. And if the state concludes that your threat to leave is credible, undefined term, and I don't think any of these threats were credible, then they will let you keep the income taxes withheld from your workers' paychecks. And think about that for a moment. The workers don't know this. As soon as the money is withheld from your paycheck by your employer, the state regards it as being paid. Then the state gives the company a tax credit equal to the withholding of all the employees. And some of the states, the way the laws are written, it isn't how much was withheld, held, it's how much the liability actually is. This could mean that, let's say you underwithheld, so the state withheld during the course of the year $1,000 from your paycheck, and you owe $500 to the state. So you write a check to the state for $500 at the start of the new year, and you're actually writing a check to your employer. But you don't know, because the employer's going to have to tell you. And why are they doing this? Well, most of the big states have allowed companies to arrange their affairs so they pay little or no state income tax. Most corporate income tax is paid by mom and pop and family businesses, not by the big multinationals and the big national companies. Then they've given them, in many areas, exemptions from property taxes or various property tax deals and exemptions in whole or in part from sales tax. And when the companies come back and say, more, we want more, this is the way to do it without writing them a check. Just let them keep the taxes withheld from their workers' paychecks. And don't tell the workers.
And who spearheaded this? Where'd
it
come from?
It's now being pushed by every one of the economic development agencies around the country and the lawyers and the tax credit industry and big companies. And companies are going around now saying, and I'm sure this will arise in California sooner or later, somebody will say, well, if you don't get a law passed to allow us to do this, we're going to move to Indiana or Illinois or Missouri. Because they'll let us do that. The law is already in place in Idaho and Oregon. It's going to and it's going to go everywhere. Nobody knows about it. Back in April, a study on this was released by a little organization called Good Jobs First. It has $1 million budget, tiny organization. I know by name the reporters who worked on this story for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and Bloomberg. No stories appeared.
None.
Now, I don't mean to suggest to people there's a conspiracy out there where business is suppressing this. That's not what's happening. What's happening is editors decided in all of those cases something else was more important. They pulled the reporters off it. What could be more important than your taxes being diverted from public uses, from paying for schools and police and parks and roads, to lining the pockets of companies?
We're speaking with David K. Johnston, author of The Fine Print. We've got just about a minute and a half, David. Let's dive in before we go to break and talk about big oil, because California is one of the only states in the country, the only oil-producing states, that does not tax oil companies. And I was astounded to read about their profits at a time when, here in San Francisco, gas is around $4.20 a gallon.
Well, the oil companies are just fundamentally astonishing. One particular segment of the oil industry called the independent oil and gas companies. So we're not talking about Exxon and Shell and Chevron, but the so-called independent companies. They get a deal that is so valuable in tax terms that if you had two companies that each earned a 10% profit in the market, the company that's an independent oil and gas company actually earns 14.1%, because we give it tax breaks that are equal to 4.1% of its revenues, which makes the total gain here 14.1%. That's astonishing, absolutely astonishing. And in some places, Alaska, Wyoming, and Montana, for example, oil companies are taxed to hold down people's tax burdens overall. In Louisiana, California, and some other states, they're basically subsidized through a whole variety of subtle mechanisms that make your taxes go up for their benefit.
Well, hold that thought, and we'll talk more about that after a break. We're speaking with David K. Johnston, a longtime tax reporter. He's out with a new book today. It's called The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. And, of course, after the break, we'll continue talking about how we can fight back against all of this. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call, and we'll be back after this.
And I'm Matt Martin, General Manager of KALW, asking for your support at 800-525-9917. The kind of independent information that you get from David K. Johnston is just what Your Call is about, supporting, improving, bringing forward. Your call or click now makes it happen.
Yes, thank you. 800-525-9917 or online kalw.org. For a $120 contribution, we will send you David K. Johnston's brand new book, The Fine Print. And if we can get 20 calls or clicks this hour, we will get an extra $500 thanks to generous listeners.
Bill Farrell in San Carlos and Shelby and Vicki Solomon in Piedmont have put forward $500 to challenge your call listeners. And we're doing very short breaks, Rose.
Yes.
So we can have a full hour with David K. Johnson. That means the calls and clicks need to start now if we're going to make it to that goal.
And we can do it. 800-525-9917. We are only able to really scratch the surface. We'll go in depth talking about oil and other things, but this book is chock full of brand new information. You're going to want to read this and then tell everyone you know. 800-525-9917. $120. We will send you David's new book, The Fine Print, KALW.org, or 800-525-9917. And I see that we have an open line.
800-525-9917. If you've read David K. Johnson's past books like Perfectly Legal, he is just amazing because he's someone who has a sense of outrage about things that are going on, but it's always backed up by in-depth research. He is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, more than a decade at the New York Times, now as an independent reporter. Your support keeps this voice on the air, and we're happy to send you the fine print for a contribution of $120.
800-525-9917, and we can take blocks to really talk about PG&E. You can't really do that in most other media. 800-525-9917. You can also go online to kalw.org.
800-525-9917. We're going to be back to this conversation in just 45 seconds. So right now, help us make it to this challenge. Get yourself the fine print if you can contribute at the $120 level. And at any level, I want to make it clear, any call or click at KALW.org or 800-525-9917 will get us closer to that challenge for the hour and closer to our goal for this drive. Your support makes it all happen at KALW.
KALW.org, 800-525-9917. I see the phone lines are ringing. Thank you so much. 20 calls and clicks, we will get an extra $500 for independent radio. 800-525-9917. Support a station that gives an hour to someone like David K. Johnston. We'll also talk after the break about corporate tax loopholes, things that we should be hearing in this national dialogue, but we're not. 800-525-9917. You can also go online to kalw.org. $120 will send you this excellent book. kalw.org. Thanks for your support. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call, and today we are speaking with Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter David K. Johnston. He is out with a new book out today called The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. And this book is chock full of incredible facts. I still love facts, David, and the one that I really love, and we'll talk again about oil, but this one I keep repeating to friends, and I put it on Facebook this morning. Closing corporate tax loopholes would bring in $1 trillion a year, which would be enough to nearly balance the budget in 2013. Why don't we hear that in the national dialogue? David? Did we drop David? David, are you with us? I think we lost David. All right. Well, we will reconnect with David. So like I said, I love facts, and this book is full of them. There's the one about corporate tax loopholes, and then he also writes about wages. Here's another good one. The median wage, half make more, half less, hovered at just over $500 a week for 12 years. In 2010, the median wage fell back to the level of 1999. This is according to the Social Security Administration. And then in 2010, like the dozen years before it, one in three workers made less than $15,000 a year, while just one in four earned $50,000 or more. And this is very relevant to the comments that Mitt Romney made about the people that are voting for President Obama. And David, are you back with us?
I am. I don't know what happened. Okay. Went dead, but I'm back.
Okay, well, that's all right. So I'm glad you're back. So I was just talking about the fact, one of the facts that I love in your book, and it's about closing corporate tax loopholes. This would bring in $1 trillion a year, which would be enough to nearly balance the budget in 2013. Why don't we hear more about this with all this talk about the deficit?
Well, that's a little more subtle than balancing the budget, because there would be other economic effects. But because, I mean, I believe firmly what's happened in this country is we have allowed corporations to grow, as you pointed out by Sam in the book, to the point where the state now exists to serve the corporations rather than the corporations serving the state, as began with the Romans. If you're trying to run for office, if you want to be a U.S. senator or a congressperson, one of the things you will quickly learn is that you've got to deal with all sorts of corporations, and whatever committee you're on, they're the ones who are going to be all over you. And Joe Sixpack and Joan Housewife or Mary Office Worker are not the people who are involved in politics. It's the large corporations that have figured out how to mine the political system to avoid the rigors of market competition, get rules passed to thwart competitors, to allow them to do things like collect taxes that they don't have to turn over to the government, but you're forced to give to them, and a whole host of other devices to benefit themselves. And that's the agenda that's going on. I mean, labor unions have been radically shrunk. I think it's hilarious every time I hear somebody talk about big labor. I think we should start calling it little labor.
Right.
And they were never nearly as powerful as corporations to begin with. A lot of the influence in Washington from mainline Protestant organizations has gone away as those churches have seen their flocks, you know, take up football on Sunday instead of going to church. The rise of the two-income couple has meant radically less time to spend on political and community events. And there's been this huge change about political activity. When I was a boy in California, I can remember during the 1956 election, when I was 7 years old, a cashier at the grocery store who had an I Like Ike button, and the next row over, the cashier had an Adlai Stevenson button. Mm-hmm. And they and the customers would talk politics. Mm-hmm. Companies fire you now for things like having a bumper sticker that indicates you like some candidate. So there's been a huge suppression of this, and it's something I would not have expected at all. I thought in the 60s you were going to see a lot of ground-up movement there to change the country. There was a whole movement called empowerment, and now people, well, we can't do anything about it. We can't fight City Hall. How can we take them on? They're so big.
Right.
Well, we can, by the way. We got rid of slavery. Women got the right to vote. We have child labor laws. We got environmental laws. And that's pretty recent. Nixon signed most of those. We can solve our problems, but not if we don't work at it.
Well, and we have a related question from Celine in Capitola, who says, I'm sure I'm brainwashed to believe that capitalism is the best way to go, but if the system means paying workers the least you can, charging customers the most you can, regardless of real costs, and paying the least taxes you can, is what we have now inevitable? And what are the alternatives besides fighting company by company?
Well, the problem there isn't capitalism per se. It's not market economics. Markets are good things. They're the best device human beings have come up with so far to deal with economics. I mean, it may be that, you know, we look back now at people from the 1500s when we had mercantilism and go, that was silly. And maybe in the Star Trek world of the future, people will look back at our age and laugh at us. But for now, markets and competition are the best things that we have. But what's happened is we've set up this now worldwide economy. So if you are a global-level capitalist, you can play both sides of this game. You move the jobs to China or Vietnam or some other very low-wage place, which puts pressure to drive down the wages on whoever still works for you in the U.S. You get Congress to let you have tax rules where you can build up unlimited amounts of untaxed cash offshore. I estimate right now there's about $3 trillion of untaxed corporate profits sitting offshore. And you get the laws that allow workers to organize and have unions decimated. So while the Germans have unions clear up into the executive ranks and all of our major economic competitors have unions, in America, basically we have unions in some legacy old industries like newspapers or telephone systems that are falling, and all those unions are weakening. Very highly paid occupations, football player, baseball player, and public employees. We don't have them in the private sector, and that's a major reason that wages and benefits have been falling for a long time.
We're speaking with David K. Johnston about his new book, out today, The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. And we have full lines, so let's hear from Philip in Oakland. Hi, Philip. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. A couple of questions. One, is there anything that prevents public utilities, specifically PG&E, from gouging in terms of profit? Do they have any limits on their profit? It seems to me that what's wrong with this country today is that profit is king, that the social welfare, the common market of the common folk is completely ignored in favor of corporate profits.
Well, let's take that one first. David, are there any limits on profits for companies
like
PG&E?
Yeah, utility companies are supposed to have their profits limited, and they're set very generously. The average return on assets of all corporations in America is about between 6 and 7%. Utilities typically get an after-tax return of around 11%. You notice that's getting close to being twice as much. But then, because utilities, like other big companies, have figured out how to take advantage of a whole host of mechanisms, including something called the holding company, to pay little or no tax, their real returns can often be 16-18%. And so, yeah, there are limits, but they're not really being addressed as it applies to utility companies, certainly not the way they used to be.
All right, Philip, and you had another question? Oh, did we drop Philip?
Hello?
Hi. Oh, hi, Philip in Oakland, another Philip. Hi.
Yeah, there was two Philips
okay.
in a row there. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
One of the things that comes to mind to me with regard to the power of corporations and kind of as a sideline, the Occupy movement. The Occupy movement, in a way, kind of to me reflects the disorganization of the populace in the United States, in that they have a lot of complaints, many of them or most of them referring back to the power of corporations, and yet there's no formal organization that could change it. It's just it's easy to disseminate their power. And so to me, the critical path route for both Occupy and your guest's agenda would be to change the power of corporations by limiting their access to government. Like most, the access that corporations have in the United States is ridiculous compared to other nations in the world. It would be considered, something against the law. I just wonder if your guest has any ideas as to how that might occur, effectively change political contributions and power of corporations directly as a legal aspect.
All right, thanks. What are your thoughts, David?
Well, Philip, you've raised a really, really good point. There's a piece in the New York Times today sort of mocking the Occupy movement because they didn't get anywhere. And organizations are what change things. There was a whole suffrage movement. Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who had 8 children, and Susan B. Anthony, who was never married, worked hard and long. It took them decades to get women the right to vote. On the other side, the history of this is that when Ralph Nader came along in the 60s and started showing various things that were problems with corporations, like unsafe automobiles, in not just the Corvair, automobiles generally, and why they were unsafe, and automobile traffic deaths have fallen tremendously since then, even though we drive a lot more. Corporate America studied what he was doing, and then they replicated it. And they co-opted what Nader was doing. And on the other side, there's been no mechanism to raise the money to do something similar. That's the real fundamental problem. But Philip is quite right. If you're not organized, the farm workers, for example, we've gotten absolutely nowhere without the United Farm Workers and the other organizations that supported them. They didn't get very far, but they would have gotten nowhere without organization.
What do you mean that the corporations co-opted what Nader was doing?
Well, they essentially copied his model, which is when Nader wrote this first book, Unsafe at Any Speed, about how automobiles didn't have seat belts and they had knobs that would, break your knee and ways you would fly through the windshield unnecessarily, and got the public's attention and got consumer laws passed. And it was long. You get a list of all the laws that grew out of Nader's work, it'll go on for pages, to help consumers. And a lot of big companies got together and said, particularly with the Lewis Powell, famous Lewis Powell memo by the lawyer who later became a Supreme Court justice, well, we have to create something like that. So you saw the Heritage Foundation, Cato, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, the 12 big right-wing, largely but not all, corporate think tanks, quote-unquote think tanks, because they're really ideological marketing organizations. Just like Wall Street sells you on Brill cream and coloring your hair, ideological marketing organizations try to persuade you that it's in your interest for your boss to get tax cuts and you to pay yet lower wages.
And Ralph Nader will be on our show on October 8th, by the way. We're speaking today with David K. Johnston, author of The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. We've got a number of listeners who want more information on solutions, David. So let's hear next from William in Belvedere. Hi, William.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm sorry to say that, and it's kind of unusual, I'm finding myself kind of resentful about the guest, because I think that sometimes people who take the big view can decide that after they provided us with a whole bunch of information which most of us have, frankly, anyway, anyone who has Google has the information and who's oriented in a progressive way, that's the end of the story for them, and they say, so now I've done my work. What I would like to know, and what I might have an idea about, is how to work on individual issues in our local state, our local communities, to build from the bottom up. We all know what's wrong, frankly. And the question is what to do about it. I'm going to make one concrete suggestion, if I may. And maybe it seems too small to even be bothered about. But I'm working on the ballot initiative to require the labeling of genetically modified food, not just because I'm concerned about the genetically modified food, but because as the campaign develops, it's pointing out the role of giant corporate agriculture and corporations in general. And I appreciate the guests' perspective on dealing with a specific concrete thing.
All right, thank you. And David, just to let you know, that's Prop 37, and it would require genetically modified foods to be labeled.
I'm really glad William brought this up. First of all, you won't find what's in my book by going to Google. Google is simply a parasitic organization that links to work by other people. This is original research. It is not stuff that's been published. Unless you read my column when I worked for Reuters until last week, you haven't read almost anything that's in this book, including, for example, a Warren Buffett insurance company asking a Sacramento man to die because it was costing too much money to keep him alive. I kid you not, there's a whole chapter about that.
Yes.
But let me give you a specific, there's a whole bunch of solutions in my book. In my previous two books, Perfectly Legal and Free Lunch, I couldn't do much about solutions because the editors of the New York Times, where I worked at the time, said the proposed solutions is to state a bias.
Really?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I was quite surprised by that, but that was their position. But in this book, I give lots of specific actions people can take. And let me give you a one that very much affects Californians. If you file a short-form tax return, that is, you do not itemize deductions, and 70% of Americans do not itemize. So a lot of people listening to this show right now are people who do not itemize and file a short-form tax return. There's no reason for you to have to fill out a tax return, and in the state of California, there is a program called Ready Return. Currently, it's only open to single people who only have wages as income. Intuit, the maker of TurboTax, is so determined that you will fill out a tax return for which most people, even people with a simple return, pay someone. 78% of short forms are done by a paid preparer, which means the paid preparer buys their software or you buy their software. They gave $1 million to support one assemblyman down in Ventura County who promised eternal fealty to Intuit and to the idea that you will file a tax return no matter what. There's no need for you to file a tax return. Most of the modern countries in the world have gotten rid of them for ordinary wage earners. And if everyone listening to this show were to read the chapter on this in my book and then write a letter to their state legislator and send copies of that to their friends and ask their friends to do the same thing, and I mean written letters, not emails, I think you would see a change. By the way, the people who were surveyed who participated in Ready Return, where the state fills out your tax return in advance, and if you're not happy with it, you can do your own, and if you're happy with it, you just send it back. They called it things like the greatest government program ever, the most fantastic thing they'd ever see the government do, 98% approval rating. By the way, the other person fighting against it tooth and nail is Grover Norquist, because, of course, unless people are angry about the tax system, how can Grover Norquist pursue his goal to shrink government down to where he can drown it in the bathtub.
Right. And you have a couple other success stories in here, David. One of the big ones is when Bank of America, was it Bank or Wells that was going to charge $5 a month?
That's Bank of America.
Bank of America.
Wells Fargo was going to take a woman, her home, a single mother's home, over a car loan that was unconscionable that I tell about. And luckily, because of two law students, that didn't happen. They actually outsmarted the big company. But Bank of America, remember, was going to impose a $5 per month fee on some of its smaller customers just to withdraw money from your bank account. The public somehow caught the public imagination. It was on all three networks for several nights, and Bank of America backed down, although it didn't do it right away. It hung in there as long as it could. At the same time, I tell how the old Crocker Bank, now part of Wells Fargo, Crocker Bank based in San Francisco, there was a court case 30-some years ago where they had to disclose that the cost of handling a bounced check to them was about 30 cents, and they were charging $6. That's a 2,000% markup. And I show that now with the digital system, you can end up having a markup on a bounced check. Somebody gave you a check, your employer maybe, and it bounced, of 470,000%.
Wow.
But the courts don't find that to be unconscionable, even though the doctrine of unconscionability, that you can't charge prices that have no relationship to cost, goes back thousands of years.
We're speaking with David K. Johnston, author of the new book, The Fine Print. We have just about 4 minutes left, so let's try to get in a couple more calls. Let's hear from Aaron in Oakland. Hi, Aaron.
Yeah, good morning. Since we're talking about solutions now, I just want to suggest Community Choice Energy is an alternative to PG&E, and it's a really good way to curtail their power in our lives and develop green jobs and renewable energy on a local level. And all you need to do is Google Clean Energy and Jobs Oakland, and you'll get the campaign website.
All right. Thank you so much. And we have time for one more caller. Let's hear from Kevin in Felton. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks. The caller just before the last one was talking about this. It's one thing to explain what's going on. It's another to actually enter into these regulatory discussions, the rulemaking process, effectively. And I've, for instance, attended Public Utilities Commission meetings and got onto the commenter or the party list for an important rulemaking process. But anybody who thinks that this doing such a thing is just something that you can take up in your evening hours after work should not even try this. When they hand you the document that you fill out in order to become a party to a rulemaking process, the first question on the top of that document is the name of your attorney. And then you give out a bunch of other information before the name of the organization you represent or your own name would ever go on the document. And this is emblematic of how corporations and their sycophants in the regulatory process construct these processes so they are as opaque as possible to make it very difficult for the general public to participate. The only way to participate in the Public Utilities Commission is with the assistance of professionals. Really, I'm not exaggerating. A team of committed activists could possibly do it, but they would have to have two or three people who are on the ground doing this.
Well, thanks for calling in, Kevin. Let's get a response from David.
Well, Kevin is exactly right, but he lives in a community. There's a chapter in my book about people in Felton, which is right outside Santa Cruz, fought back against Cal-Am Water, which was tripling their water rates and planned to triple them every few years, and bought the water system. And they were fought all the way. They were mocked by the staff of one of the public utilities commissioners that they should be respectful of corporations. And they won. This community won. 74% of the people voted to get rid of their monopoly corporate water company. And Felton is actually a terrific story of how, yes, you do have to ultimately as a group get together and find a way to hire lawyers who know this stuff, but you can fight back and win despite all the barriers that are put up and all the efforts to make this not understandable to people who are not specialists in the field.
Yeah, I love the story about Felton. And David, we have about 30 seconds left. Final thoughts on this, specifically on fighting back?
Well, we can solve these problems, but people have to get involved. And that means people need to create organizations. They need to pick specific things they want to go after and focus on where they can make a difference in one way or another. There are plenty of organizations dealing right now with PG&E and the water companies and the gas companies. TURN is one example. There's a Marin Women for Utility Reform or something like that. There are a whole group of organizations that you can be involved in if you want to focus on the utilities, if you want to focus on why we don't have the information superhighway we were promised, even though we're paying for it. There are groups doing that. But reform begins with you.
Do you expect a good review in the New York Times, David?
Well, I don't know. The last time I wrote a book, I got an incredibly hostile review that never told people it was in the book.
Well, thank you. Keep it up, David. This is incredible information. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Rose.
Thank you. That's David K. Johnston. He's out with a new book today called The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for listening.
And you're listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco. I'm Matt Martin, here with Rose in the studio. And with just a few minutes left in this hour, we're asking for your support. We have a challenge before us. We need 20 calls or clicks at 800-525-9917 or going online to KALW.org to make it to this challenge.
And we've got 10 to go. I know we can do this. 800-525-9917 for a $120 contribution. We will send you David K. Johnston's new book, The Fine Print. And we've got a couple of lines open, 800-525-9917 or online, KALW.org.
800-525-9917, KALW.org. I really like that message that David was sending at the end of the program, saying communities can win these battles. People can fight back. But there's that basis of real information is critical. That's what KALW is about keeping that conversation going, sharing the information, and talking about solutions. Your support at 800-525-9917 will make sure this resource is here for everyone.
$120 will send you the new book, The Fine Print, just out today. I think this was David's first interview. Support this kind of radio, 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. Matt, I'm not sure you heard this, but David said when he was at the New York Times, they said that proposing solutions in his articles was a bias. That's how they thought. But we really want to focus on solutions because at the end of the day, that's all we have. So support that kind of radio, 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
Radio that is biased towards democracy and finding solutions to our social problems. 800-525-9917. Show your bias. Give a call. KALW.org or 800-525-9917.
You're channeling the women from Canada. 800-525-9917 or online KALW.org. We need 10 calls or clicks. I know we can do it in these final minutes. We've got one line open, two lines open, 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
Thanks to W. Henry, Stephen Wallstrom, and Eleanor Shapiro, all of whom called 800-525-9917. The Tuesday shows here on Your Call are always about how we make a more just economy, an economy that is in tune with democracy. Those are the kind of questions that David K. Johnston takes on in his book, The Fine Print, from what's in your utility bill to rulemaking processes to how tax law gets set in Washington, D.C. All of those are issues that we deal with regularly here on Your Call. Your support keeps it coming, and you can get even more information with this book. But remember, every call or click that happens, whether you pledge at the $120 level or you pledge at the $50 or $25, we've had people who've pledged $500 today. Whatever level you come in at, it will make a great difference and help us wrap up this last membership drive for the next 8 months as a success.
It's all transparent here at KALW, 800-525-9917. Help us make this goal, KALW.org. Support these shorter pledge breaks. We've gotten such a great response to this. $120, we will send you David K. Johnston's new book, The Fine Print, 800-525-9917. You can also go online, KALW.org.
This is going to be close. The only way these short breaks can work is if you keep calling or clicking. Even after we stop talking, we're going to go to the next program, but there's no reason you can't go online to KALW.org. Choose a thank you gift if you like The Fine Print, the brand new book from David K. Johnston, yours for a $120 contribution, or you can call 800-525-9917. 800-525-9917. Bill Farrell in San Carlos, Shelby and Vicky Solomon in Piedmont put forward $500 to say something simple. Let's do this together. Let's keep this station strong. 800-525-9917.
800-525-9917, KALW.org. Thank you.